Blog Talk Radio. Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to Lenny Godfrey's Straight No Chaser. Well, this evening, we are going to have a great time. There's a wonderful surprise in store for you. But before I get to my wonderful guest, I'm going to do a little housekeeping, as I usually do, so that those of you who are listening for the first time will know how to call up or know how to refer to old episodes. And then those of you who do not know, we do an after show, Afterthought, and that appears on YouTube and on the Godly Entertainment page on Facebook. So it's on my channel on YouTube and on Godly Entertainment on Facebook. That's the after show, Afterthoughts. But here is the site that you can refer to when you want to hear some of the episodes. It's blogtalkradio.com/S as in Sam, F as in Fred, T as in Tom, H as in Harry, and the number 2. Or you can dial 516-453-6063, call in and ask questions, or just to send your love. We'd love to hear from you. Now, one of the other things that I'd like to say is that I want you to tune in tomorrow. I'm not going to be on this particular channel. I'm going to be on the visualarts.com channel, and I am doing a show about two new groups. They're Black young people who have created groups who found the necessity to find something out on their own, and there's music associated with it. And we're going to also talk about the concept of Juneteenth. Now, getting that all out of the way, I really do want you to enjoy my next guest, because I'm going to introduce him. He is a star of television and stage and film. We've known each other for a long time. I'm going to now play a little clip so you can hear some of his wonderful talent. Hold on.
There's a boat that's leaving soon for New York.
And ladies and gentlemen, my wonderful guest and lovely friend, Mr. Damon Evans. Hello, Damon.
Oh, Lenny, hello, hello, hello. It's been too long.
No,
what did we say? It's been at least 30 years.
I know. Don't say it. I'm only 33. What are you talking about?
Oh, God. It's so good to be with you today.
Oh, it's wonderful to hear your voice. And I mean, I really do enjoy your work. That was really a wonderful
rendition. Oh, diddle, the same with you, darling. The same with you, Miss Mama String Bean. We'll get into that later.
Well, thank you so much. Oh, I see this now. It's going to be just us catching up and laughing this entire aisle, this hour. But however, now, Damon, seriously, I want people to know, with all of the things that you've done, your extensive work on the stage, the Me Nobody Knows, Hair, Hello Dolly, Don't Bother Me, I Can't Cope, Jesus Christ Superstar, where you played, didn't you play both Judas and Jesus at one point?
Yes, I was the very first Black Jesus in the history of the authorized Robert Stigwood concert version. I was even, they were contemplating having me replace Jeff Penholt on Broadway, but instead I went into Via Galactica on Broadway. But yes, yes, technically
yes.
The first Black Jesus.
Oh, how wonderful. And then, of course, you know, we know that your work on the screen has been there with the Jeffersons and Roots and more. And if, you know, if you all are curious about hearing this man sing and hit those notes, you should go to YouTube and you should look up the 1977 Tony Awards and listen to this doll sing You'll Never Walk Alone. You were fabulous, Damon. Just
thank you,
fabulous.
Darling. Thank you, my dear. Thank you.
You're just
oh, my
fabulous.
God.
Yes. Oh, you know, I had to give the props. But now I want to go back. Born in Baltimore. Am I correct?
Right. Right.
All right. When did the arts enter your life? And now I want to get you there and trace you back to New York and then to L.A. So we're going to do that in about 50 minutes, but I don't know if we're going to make it because, you know.
I don't know. Okay. So I'm born in Baltimore. Actually, throughout my entire education, except my last year of high school, where I got a scholarship to Interlochen Arts Academy, I always attended predominantly Black public schools.
Mm-hmm.
However, my mother always enlisted me in white performing arts organizations outside of school.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I was 11 years old, I was in a group called the Children's Theater Association, along with Howard Ashman, who wrote Little Shop of Horrors, Aladdin, Beauty and the Beast,
yes.
Eddie Strauss, who was a music director on Broadway of the Me Nobody Knows, and then, believe it or not, Howard and I did a production of The Fantastics together in high school. He was at his white school. I met my Black school. They imported me. I went to Peabody Conservatory Prep Division as a kid, beginning in junior high school. So then I went away to the National Music Camp in Michigan, and they were so impressed with my work, they offered me a scholarship my last year of high school there.
That's fabulous. Now that starts a whole life full of the arts for you. Did you find that the arts were a bit of an escape for you? Was it the avenue? Did you have any friends when you were doing that? Did you make friends while doing that? It's so important that young people know how important the arts are for them at the very beginning.
Okay. So the arts were just a natural expression to me. Now, I don't know about you, but I grew up, I thought everybody acted, they sang, they did it all. I didn't know that some people just did one or the other. So,
we're very similar in that. I just thought everybody did what they did the same.
In fact, I got to tell you something. When I graduated from Interlochen, I was so guilt-ridden that I, this Black kid from Baltimore, had this opportunity to go to this performing arts high school. I kept saying, but there are friends of mine in Baltimore who've never done an opera. They're at Morgan. They're at Peabody. I started my own opera company at the age of 17 called the Baltimore Youth Chamber Opera Society. We presented Carlo Minotti's The Telephone and The Medium at the Arena Players, the second oldest Black community theater group in the United States. They charged us $100 for the entire use of the place, the costumes, everything. We were so well received that we repeat an engagement. One of the singers, Myron Merritt, went on to sing at the Met for many years. Earl Grandison sang in the chorus of the first Porgy and Bess at the Met. Florence Quivar, her senior year at Morgan, won a Fulbright Foundation scholarship, and my cousin Margaret Lindsay ended up teaching voice at the Baltimore School of the Arts.
Oh, that's fat. Now
we were between the ages of 16 and 21.
Now, Arena Players, does that still exist today?
Yes, it does. Yes, it
does.
Oh,
really?
Along with the Caramu Players in Cleveland.
Oh, all right. All right. So, and this is real. Is it in Baltimore proper?
In Baltimore proper.
All right. I'm making a note about that because
I'll tell you who an ex-Arena Player was. We both received citations. Howard Rawlins, the Academy Award winning actor. Yes.
Yes. Yes. Oh, Howard. That handsome, lovely man. Yes.
Wasn't he?
Oh, my God.
Good God.
Are you talking about
chocolate delicious?
That's a pretty man. That was a pretty man. You know, I remember my father was alive when they did Soldier's Story, and my father was that coloring. And when he would put on his uniform, I'd had pictures of my father in black and white. I said, now I know what my father looked like in color in his uniform. Howard was just beautiful. He was just a beautiful-looking man.
I first saw Howard in an off-Broadway play called Medal of Honor Rag. I think it was at the Theatre de Lys on Christopher Street in the Village. Mm-hmm. I said, I have never in my life seen such a beautiful black man as this, and he's talented to boot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he had it all, and everyone in Baltimore, predicted that he was going to have the career that he had.
Well, he did. He was a wonderful comic that just came and went really quickly.
Yes.
But God, we're so blessed that he did.
Oh, and I'll tell you who else. She wasn't Arena Players, but they honored her. Trezanna Beverly, who won a Tony Award for Colored Girls.
Yes. Oh, how wonderful. Well, you know, no wonder all you divas were up at that little day. You know, check Arena Players out.
And wait a minute. As a kid, 13 or 14 years old, I remember seeing a production of Langston Hughes' musical, Simply Heavenly, sitting next to Langston Hughes himself.
Oh, my. Oh, my.
He came to Baltimore to see it, and there I am sitting next to the great Langston Hughes.
Oh, how wonderful. What a wonderful memory that is.
Oh, yeah,
No wonder your whole life has been in the arts. Now, I'm going to travel now, so you can't, let's travel a little bit and let's keep on going till you got to New York. Now, how did you get to New York City? Come on.
Okay. So, I took a brief sojourn to the Boston Conservatory of Music, where I majored in musical theater for a year and a half. My very first... equity show was as an understudy in Hair.
Oh, right.
Now this is interesting. I have to tell you this. I didn't go on every night. So I would cross the street and watch the out-of-town tryout of this brilliant new musical called Company. I was there practically every night, and I said, oh, my dear God, this is why I want to do musical theater.
Theater, yes.
And
yes.
Then I got furious. I said, there is not one black soul on this stage. Okay,
yes.
I'm 19 or 20 years old. I go home and I write a letter to Hal Prince. I said, Mr. Prince, you have been a god to me. I've been raised on everything you've done. My one wish is that one day I will be in a Hal Prince production. But unfortunately, from your track record of hiring black actors, you think we're invisible. And we talked about this earlier. I am so disappointed that my dream will never come true.
I know. Except for...
And I mailed the letter.
Yeah.
I never heard anything from him, but my first agent in New York was a woman named Dulcie Eisen.
Yes, Dulcie Eisen. She represented a lot of people that I know. Yes.
Dulcie is who gave me the name Damon, because my real name is Richard.
No, Damon. Oh, really?
Yes, my birth name is Richard.
I'm finding this out. on the air.
Everybody called me Dickie up until one day Actors Equity said, you can't use Richard or Dickie because there's already a Richard Evans. What do you want your name to be? And Dulcie Eisen is sitting next to me, and she says, Daryl? And I said, no. She said, Damon? I said, yes.
Well, look at that.
Dulcie was at a party, and she called me, and she said, did you ever write a letter to Hal Prince? I said, yes. She said, well, I was at a party, and there was someone from his office, and we were talking about my clients, and your name came up, and she said, Hal received a letter from him, and he showed it to everyone in the office. Interesting, isn't it?
Yes, it is. The performers who have done
I've never
that,
told this before, and fabulous. I'll tell you why. I've never told it because Prince is such a god that I was afraid of being attacked.
Well, you know, this is not something to attack someone. It actually happened. You responded to something that actually was in existence. You know, it is not that there are pieces of theater that are classic that everyone should get an opportunity to be able to perform in. And that's it. You know, I don't think that there's anything that anyone should attack you for, but if they want to, I want them to come on and do it right now.
Yeah. Well, thank you. But actually, the funny thing, I think back on it, it was actually a love letter to him.
Well, of course. You know, he Hal Prince.
Well, anyway, we will continue with this because this story goes on a little further, but let's keep talking.
All right. Now you're in New York now. You're understudying Hair.
Okay, the first person I worked for was Vinette Carroll.
Now, yes, that's the Urban Arts Corps, right?
Yes, with Janelle Allen, Barbara Montgomery, Marie Thomas, oh, God, Alex Bradford. We did a show called, I want to say Step Lively Boys, music by Mickey Grant. Mm-hmm. It was in the 20s. We had a lost theater there. This was before Janelle won her Tony. Marie had done her soap opera. Oh, yes, that was the first person I worked for. And I don't know how I got it, but remember, in those days, we had the trade papers.
Well, yes, and then you wouldn't go. But with Vinette, everyone did everything. I've worked now with people. I never met her. I never got an opportunity to meet her. But I've heard so much about her. It seems that I do know her. And what she insisted upon was that everyone do everything, you know? And that kind of training is just invaluable in our business. When I look back on it,
I think Vinette may have been the first black woman director on Broadway. I can't think of anyone before her.
She was. Vinette was the first one. She was the first one. Yes, she was. Yes. She was. And very disciplined, very, you know, a wonderful personality. So I hear. But again, you know, life is one of those things where you have parallel lives, but they never touch. And I never got an opportunity. But of course, I know Barbara Montgomery. I know Marie Thomas very well. I mean, all of these people that you're talking about, I know them. And they talk and talk and talk about Vinette. You know,
I see Marie, I say, Marie, you know, you're one of the great beauties of the world. That girl was so gorgeous.
Yes. Well, Marie and I were neighbors in New Jersey.
That's right.
So
I saw her and Andre do a play at Henry Street a few years ago. She was brilliant. Brilliant. Mm-hmm.
Yes. She's wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. She was on The Doctors, right?
Yes.
She was on The Doctors. Yes. All right.
And then,
Vinette,
then I worked with Pearl in Hello, Dolly.
Yes.
Okay, I love Pearl. I love Miss Pearl. She auditioned us personally. Do you hear me?
Yes.
And I'll tell you why. It was a road company of Hello, Dolly, and she had missed all these performances with David Merrick, and he was going to sue her. So she said, no, honey, don't sue me. Let's take the show out on the road, and I will co-produce it with you, but I have final casting approval.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, it was an all-black company, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay,
yes.
The way Pearl did it, because Pearl never liked that concept, Pearl cast all the major roles black and totally integrated the ensemble.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Oh,
really?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Okay.
Because you remember, at that time, she had been anointed or appointed the ambassadress of love by Richard Nixon.
Yes, yes, yes. Another. She's another ancestor that we really need to pay her more respect.
Ben Harney's daughter did a one-woman show on Pearl Bailey.
Yes, Bale. She does. And
wonderful, talented girl, just like her father.
Yes, yes. And C.B. Murray is the one who created it for, because that aunt. Yes, that's C.B.'s aunt. So, it's a wonderful, different interpretations, just keeping her alive, keeping that imagery alive. There are a lot of different, opinions about what her accomplishments were, but she did have accomplishments. So we need to continue to keep that alive. But I'm pushing you forward. Okay, keep going. Keep going.
Okay. Immediately after that, I'm in Hello, Dolly. I mean, not Hello, Dolly. The Me Nobody Knows.
Okay.
Who
now,
should
you
show
in
up
Hello,
at
Dolly?
My, oh,
were you in prison?
Immediately after that, The Me Nobody Knows with Irene, Ralph Carter, Hattie Winston, you name it. Okay.
I want to rewind for a minute. We're in Hello, Dolly. How long did you stay in it, and were you principal, ensemble? What was your experience?
Okay, I played Barnaby Tucker.
Mm-hmm. Yes, okay.
The dancing role, okay?
Yes,
I'll never forget, at the audition, she said to me, do you know how to waltz clog? And stupid me, I said, no. And she said, honey, whenever anyone asks you if you can do something, you just say, I'll try the best that I can. And I went to home, and my agent called and said, how did the audition go? I said, I was horrible. He said, well, you got the job.
Well, there you go. There you go. All right. See,
now, anyway,
and how long did you tour?
I would say close to 3 months to recoup the money she lost for David.
For David.
That's all.
Okay.
It was a cross-country tour. I got to tell you this. This is too funny. We opened at the O'Keefe Center in Toronto, and they refused to open because the marquee said David Merrick presents Pearl Bailey in Hello, Dolly. When she demanded that the marquee read Pearl Bailey and David Merrick present Pearl Bailey in Hello, Dolly.
All right. All right.
She was the co-producer.
Well, those are the lessons that we learn. That's business.
Yes.
It's business.
Yes.
All right, I'm moving you. I'm moving you.
Okay,
all
real
right.
Fast. I immediately after Hello, Dolly, I'm casting the Me Nobody Knows. I don't know how she found out, but on my opening night, there was Pearl. She came to my dressing room. I did that for about 3 months. And then it closed at the Helen Hayes Theater on Broadway, which does not exist anymore. Okay. Yeah. Somewhere along the line, I must have done Jesus Christ Superstar. Now, this is real interesting. I'm cast as Judas, which is what they gave all the black actors.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. I remember talking
after
to
about three or four weeks, they come to my hotel room and said, the vice president wants you to learn the role of Jesus. He's coming here this weekend to see you. Okay. Sure enough, Peter Brown comes, sees the performance, comes to my dressing room and says, from now on, you're Jesus. 2 days later, we opened the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C. My name is in the program. This must have all been prearranged. Anyway, from that point on, for 3 months, I played Jesus Christ. They never mentioned I was black. They never showed the picture. There was no publicity whatsoever.
All right.
Which I loved. I actually loved.
Yes.
Because
I felt
like Marian Anderson before the Lincoln Memorial. I thought someone was going to kill me.
Well, you know, I think that all of us sometimes when we are in that kind of spotlight alone, it is sometimes very frightening. It is.
Very frightening.
Now, I'm moving you. I'm moving
you
because you know what?
We're almost at 30 minutes. Via Galactica, which was supposed to be this hit, starring the great Raul Julia.
Yes.
Irene Cara again. Ralph Carter again. Stan Shaw. Melanie Shardoff, who ended up doing Saturday Night Live. Mark Baker, who ended up starring in Candide on Broadway. We're all in this show that has no stage floor. The stage floor is a trampoline because it's taking place in outer space, okay? They talk about the show Miss Saigon, where the helicopter goes over the orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Via Galactica had a spaceship that went over the first 10 rows of the orchestra at least 10, 15 years before Miss Saigon.
Wow. Really?
We were all different colors. No one was their natural color. I was blue. Irene was red. Ralph was green.
Oh, my.
The music was by Galt McDermott, who wrote Hair. Joyce mm-hmm. Brown was the first black female conductor in the pit of a Broadway orchestra.
Yes. She did Pearly.
Yes. It was supposed to be a momentous hit that lasted 1 week.
Well, all right.
And then
now,
I did Pope.
All right, I've got to get you to Los Angeles because
So I remember I had done some extra work at CBS. These were the days of freelancing. I must have gotten at least three agents saying, we want to submit you for this show called The Jeffersons. All right. So I go in, and the next thing I know, I'm flying out to do a screen test.
Yes, that's the Norman Lear way. Yes, he's done that.
Yeah, wait a minute. Yes. You haven't heard it. So I go out to do the screen test, and they said, okay, well, you've got to meet Norman. So Norman walks in. And he says, I know you. You auditioned for JJ. I'll tell you, it's up to you. I don't need a screen test. The part is yours.
There you go. That's Norman Lear.
That's
now,
how it happened.
We should tell everyone we share that relationship because you worked with and for Norman, and so did I. And there's nobody for me. There's nobody like Norman Lear.
No, Norman was the best. Norman was the best.
Yeah.
He is the best.
And he made me feel like a queen. I've not worked for anyone who's done that for me. And they gave me more gowns for him to take me around all of Los Angeles to prop me up. To show people that we were doing this show, I had, you know, it was a wonderful, wonderful fairy tale.
Yes.
Now, wait a minute.
After the third year, I want to go back. I want to do my music, which was always my first love.
Yes.
Real fast about the Tony Awards. I had done an appearance on the Merv Griffin Show. I was my second year in the Jeffersons. I was in New York, and I wrote a letter to Alex Cohen, who was the producer, saying, I've always dreamt of doing the Tonys. I'm doing the Jeffersons. Okay, so I get a call at home saying, Hildy Parks, Alex's wife, is sick right now with a broken foot or something, and she will have a look at your tape later. And I said, oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. Can you give me her address? I'll send her flowers. I sent her flowers. The very next day, I get this call. Damon, this is Hildy. That was the nicest thing. Darling, do you want to do the Tonys? I saw your tape. You're fabulous. I because everybody was saying, how did this kid out of nowhere get on the Tony Awards? That's how I got the Tony Awards. I had no William Morris, no IPM, no nothing. I wrote a letter.
Well, you know what? I'm scared of you and your letters. See, now, so I don't want to get any letters from you in my mail, okay? So wait a minute. All right. But now you're on the Jeffersons, and we both share a relationship because I work with Sherman on Amen, and you work with
I'll tell you, my love on the Jeffersons, people, was without a doubt Lenny Kravitz's mother, Roxy Roker. I love her. I love her. I love her.
She's
was classy. She was talented. I just loved Roxy.
Yes. I know people who knew her. Again, I did not get a chance to meet her, but I know people who knew her as a Broadway actress because she did River Niger. She was brilliant.
Oh, did she ever do River Niger?
Oh, she was
and got
brilliant.
A Tony nomination for it.
Yes, she was brilliant. And then on television, when given the opportunity to do any dramatic piece, she was always flawless. So I know that she was wonderful in the Jeffersons, just wonderful. You know,
and a wonderful person, just a wonderful person.
Yes. So miss her so dearly, miss that talent so dearly.
Yes.
She's lovely.
Real fast, people. I remember she used to come to work and she said, oh, God, we're so worried about Lenny. All he does is do this music. We're just so worried about his future. Lenny was the sweetest kid. He really was a sweet gentleman.
Well, I hear that he's a sweet man now. I hear that he's just a darling person.
Yes,
so I'm
glad
to know that. Now, tell me, you know, one of the things that I got a chance to, and I did get a chance to work with Berlinda Tolbert for me. Tell me about Berlinda. How was that working with her?
It was a very professional relationship. I mean, really, I went, it's so funny because you see this amazing chemistry on camera and in your homes. And yes, it exists. But at the end of the day, you go home and you're all in your different worlds. At least I was. Remember, I replaced Mike Evans.
Yes.
I was not an original member. So, you know, I always felt slightly an outsider as if I was proving myself every week. We always tape before a live audience. And I'll never forget the first year on the show when they would introduce me, invariably an audience member would say, where is the old Lionel?
Yeah.
So it was some mental stuff to get over.
Yeah, it was.
You know. After my third year, I want to go back to New York to do my music. I'm packing, literally packing my bags, and get a call from the only black casting director in Hollywood at the time, Ruben Cannon.
Ruben Cannon, yes, and we share Ruben. Yes, we do.
Ruben says to me, you were never in Roots 1, were you? I said, no. He said, well, I'm casting Roots 2 now, and we have some work for a couple of days. Would you please come in? I said, oh, okay. What would I have to do? Okay, fine. I went in. I read the scene. He goes out the room. He comes back. He hands me another script. He said, I want you to take this home and read it and come back. It's for the role of Alex Haley. Okay, so, and mind you, I'd never done a straight acting role per se. I went home. I would say within the next 12 days, I had 6 auditions. The last audition was before 6 executives from ABC, and there was Alex himself.
Wow.
I get home about 2 or 3 hours later. They said, the part is yours. We had to get the okay from Alex. And there I was. Now, mind you, I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. Excuse me. So I went out and hired an acting coach. And every night, I can't remember the man's name to save my life. Every night we went over a scene that I was shooting the next day.
The next day. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
I tell my students, it's not up to your director to do the work for you. If you don't know how to do the work, you've got to discover that for yourself.
Well, exactly. I think that that is the one thing that we can pass on to these young people is the work ethic and the fact that, you know, there's not a lot of time, especially in film and television,
those
rehearsal times. So you have to go and you have to be prepared yourself. And that's your responsibility, the quality.
That's
of
your responsibility. Now, that one last thing I'll tell you about Roots. I would not have gotten Roots if it hadn't been for Chip Fields, Kim Fields' mother.
Uh-huh.
She was up for the part of Alex's wife, which later was played by Debbie Allen, and we had to go in together.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, I'm going to work with you on this. That is how I got Alex Haley in Roots. It's because of Chip Fields. Years later, I saw Kim, who played my daughter at 8 years old in Roots, at the Black Theater Festival in Winston-Salem. I said, you be sure to tell your mother I would never have been in Roots without her.
Oh, how wonderful. How wonderful. Now, I need to know about Porgy and Bess. You need to,
and
most people need to know how we knew each other was that we both had the same manager, Larry.
Yes,
Dallas.
I was going to get there. Okay.
You can't.
Okay.
But we don't have a lot of time left now. See,
I've got to tell you this story. Larry Gallagher.
Yes.
Okay. So Larry Gallagher is okay. I'm ready. So I'm reticent because I'm 22, just wanted to do my music. The last thing I remember auditioning for on Broadway was Evita. They were looking for a replacement for Mandy Patinkin.
Mm-hmm.
So I know how the theater world works, and I don't know if any other so-called regular agent would have submitted me for a so-called white role but Larry Gallagher.
We both have stories about him, yes.
So I said, okay, you really want to manage me, get me an audition for Che. He gets me the audition. I go there that day. I work with Chapman Roberts, coach me.
Yes.
And he said, now I want your diction to be good because, you know, they think we can't speak English.
Exactly. Chapman Roberts. Yes.
You know Chapman.
Yes, I do.
A girl named Leah.
Yes, yes. Now, I know
Leah Richards. Richardson was my accompanist. They didn't have any printed music. This lady transcribed all that music from the recording.
Wow.
We get to the theater. There are about five or six white guys backstage waiting. And the man said, well, who are you? And I said, Dame Nevin. She said, go wait in the basement, in the orchestra pit. And so Leah and I look at each other, and we say, oh, okay. So we go down there, and about 15 minutes passes, 20 minutes pass, and finally Leah says to me, I think they've stopped. I run to the top of the stage, and I said, my name is Damon Evans, and I have an audition at one whatever time it was. There was Ruth Mitchell. I forget who else. Hal wasn't there. Hal Prince was not there. But they were screening people. They were literally leaving the theater.
Are you serious?
They came back. They heard me. I was furious. And the song was, and the money keeps rolling in, which is an angry song. I sang the hell out of it. I get home. The next day, Larry says, stage manager called to apologize. He said that they had really never had a black actor audition. They weren't expecting to see one. That said, he said, you gave the best audition of Che he has ever seen. And the final approval is Hal Prince himself.
All right.
I went back. I sang. I remember Leah saying to me, wasn't as good as the first time. And it took me years to realize I had been so traumatized by that original experience of going in the basement. I said to myself, do I really want to work with this man and do the show? And it showed up in the audition.
You showed up in the callback.
Yes. I didn't realize until years later.
And Leah, you know, now I'm going to tell you, we have less than 20 minutes left.
Okay, go on. Porgy and Bess. Okay. I've not done that many productions of Porgy and Bess. I did the 50th anniversary production in Charleston. Mm-hmm. I did the out-of-town tryout of the Radio City production. But my big breakthrough was working with Trevor Nunn of Les Mis and Nicholas Nickleby, and he directed our production in England with Sir Simon Rattle as our conductor. And the minute I heard this, I said, I've got to be a part of this. I just believed that this was going to be the definitive thing. It was an incredible experience. I remember hearing Patti LuPone said she did the original Les Mis, and afterwards they offered it to her on Broadway, and she said, no, I cannot duplicate the perfection of that original experience. I think I only did one production of Porgy and Bess afterwards.
Really? Well,
as
it's
said,
difficult when you get to a point when you're used to people making a certain investment in a production, and then you go to another company, say you say, and that investment is not there, your contribution changes. The whole sense of you changes, and you don't want that, and you don't want the memory of that. That's why we're artists. That's the sensitivity that we have. Now, Damon, I need to ask you a couple of questions. One of the things you've touched on it, but I want people to know, where in your life did you think was the greatest moment of growth that you had in the arts? The greatest moment of growth where you really made a discovery about where you want to be and where you wanted to be in your life.
Okay. Without a doubt. Actually, I would say 3 months before I made my debut with Porgy and Bess, I made my debut with the London Symphony Orchestra. My greatest growth was when residence of 8 years in London, England, where I finally pursued my ultimate dream of a classical music career. I sang with the London Symphony, London Philharmonic, the great Berlin Philharmonic, the Royal Opera House, the Netherlands Opera House, Almeida Festival. And the thing is, throughout that entire period, I never once auditioned. I ended up getting nominated for a Laurence Olivier Award, equivalent to our Tony, for doing Carmen Jones on the West End. They came and saw me in a concert. They asked me over to Henry Lewis, the great international conductor's apartment, to go over the music. I read for Simon Callow, the director. I never auditioned per se, ever, the entire time I was there.
What a wonderful experience.
The letdown once I came back to America was overwhelming. And that is when, essentially, a few years later, I stopped performing. People just don't acknowledge the ego of the dehumanization process of staying with it long haul.
Well, it's very, very difficult because,
you know
you really, You really are. You give your all. If you're really devoted for it, if you really have the passion for it. And we talked about that when we were children. We thought that everybody did it and did everything that we did. That shows a level of passion. When you have that
yes.
kind of passion, you know, you give everything that you have every single time. And sometimes when certain things come along the way, there's a time in your life when there are parts of things that you don't want to do anymore.
No.
You know?
Well, you know, just like the great gift of doing that opera company when I was 17 and watching those kids grow, that
yes.
is what I wanted to do.
Yes.
It
yes.
took a
yes.
great deal of work, effort, metamorphosis, change before I finally surrendered and came down to that is what I wanted. I went back
well, you
to
know,
school.
I don't think that people realize that when we come into the business, we know what our passion is, but then the business has a tendency to kind of put you on another path.
I'm glad you discussed that. I always tell my students, black or white, you've got to fall out of love of the business and then fall in love with it all over again to
mm-hmm.
realize it's a business and an art.
Exactly. And you really need to know yourself. I
yes.
know personally that there at the beginning of my career, people had made a decision as to what I was going to do and what I did well. And I thought, but I've just started. You know,
yes.
I've just started. How can you
yes.
make that assumption at the very beginning that this is all that I'm going to do? And
oh,
I've
no,
studied
no, no.
so much more. And so,
and I think,
you know, it,
I
it's
think
difficult
we
because
as black...
people get very upset with you when you do not follow the path that they
oh,
want.
Oh, please, don't even mention that. Don't even mention that. We won't even go into that. But I think it's our responsibility, especially as black artists, that we have to pass on the knowledge and the traditions and the so-called secrets that we were not told when we joined the business.
Well, yes.
It is
and
our responsibility.
Also, you know, when we want to talk in these last 10 minutes, because that's all we have left, and I knew this
uh-huh.
was going to happen, and already now I have a question. There's someone who has a question for you. So but I do want to talk a little bit about your education and the mentoring and everything, but let me go to someone and let them ask you a question in these last
okay.
10 minutes. Hold on.
Okay.
Hello and welcome to Lenny Godfrey Straight No Chaser. And tell me your name and where you're from and your question, please.
Hi, my name is Michelle and I'm based in Houston, Texas. Damon, I just love hearing all the stories. It's so wonderful and all the opportunities and the opportunities that you created for yourself by writing those letters. what I'd like to know is that you have these wonderful stories. So when is the book coming out?
You know, everyone asked me that. At first, I was adamantly opposed, adamantly. My friend, I did a Zoom talk where Lenny came at
mm-hmm.
Brooklyn College, my alma mater,
yes.
and everyone said, you've got to. So right now, I'm just taking time out. I am, you know, I am definitely contemplating the book. I'm contemplating certain classes of writing memoirs, of also possibly a one-man show. But you know something, I don't know if that... I'm not going to lie. I don't know if I have the stamina for a one-man show, but theater is what I know. If I can take that format of a one-man show and turn it into a memoir, the time won't be lost. But it's definitely coming because, darling, you haven't heard the tip of the iceberg.
Uh-oh.
No, you haven't. Thank you, Michelle. Thank you so much for calling in. Yes. But you know what? And I have to censor you, Damon, because I know you well enough. One of the things that I do want to say before we get, before we leave here is that, you know, I really do want to thank Larry Gallagher publicly for being a person. I stayed with him a while and then we parted ways and then he passed away.
Yes.
But I have to say that Larry had that unconditional vision of who of who we were, of what
yes.
our talent could be.
And our potential.
He was never hampered by the fact that we were people of color. He thought we could do anything.
Yes.
And
yes.
I really do miss that now
yes.
because that is something that is not in existence for me.
Non-existent.
Non-existent.
As I said to you, I doubt very seriously if I would have even gotten an audition for Evita
yes.
if it hadn't been for Larry.
Exactly. You know, one of the other things that I realized is that you are really passionate about your students and about education. And I am very passionate about the whole concept of the arts being included in our educational process so that it makes us better citizens. We are more informed. It is in a part of every part of our lives. And I've had people here who are corporate people who started off with the arts in their lives, the people who are in the arts, not in the arts at all. We're going to have an educational panel that comes in and talks about the arts. I want you to tell me now, in these last few minutes, your experience, what drives you with your students? Now, because you have been teaching and they're so fortunate to have someone like you who can share your experiences and the range of talent that you have. What do you want your students, if you have to say something to them for next minute and a half, what do you want for them?
Okay, I'm just going to be very brief. I taught at a predominantly white private school, $50,000 a year students. I kept saying no. I finally said yes. I loved my students. With the exception of one or two, they gave me back so much love and appreciation for what I was trying to pass on to them with my truth, my history, my stories. And my knowledge, okay? I wanted them to realize that, first of all, we all go into this because we love it.
Okay? Yes, absolutely.
But it is about the work. I used to always say it's about the work. What do you mean? What do you mean, Debbie? The work, children, the work.
I say every day when I'm in rehearsal, it's about the work. You know,
I
and
said,
it's
this
about
career,
believing in your work.
This career trajectory is not a race.
Yes, yes, yes.
It is a day-by-day process of evolution, growth.
Yes.
And ultimately giving back.
I agree. Now, I want to say a name, and both of us have been, I think, synchronicity has brought this man's name up again and again and again in conversations, in the broadcast and everything. But we talked about it, and you sent me a wonderful documentary on a man who I believe whose life has been dedicated to the arts and the advancement.
And to activism.
You know what I'm going to say. Harry Belafonte.
Now, let me tell you about Harry.
Yes.
I first saw Harry perform immediately after my ninth grade graduation in Baltimore. He came to the Baltimore Civic Center, which is the equivalent of our Madison Square Garden. Now, mind you, Harry had sworn he would never perform in Baltimore again because in the late 50s, he performed there and a hotel would not admit him because of his race. So he came back, sold out the Civic Center, the massive Baltimore Civic Center. It was an electrifying performance. Absolutely 100% electrifying. You see him on TV, you see him in the movie. There's certain performers you've got to see live. Harry is one of them. Richard Pryor was one of them. There's just certain people you've got to see live to capture their essence. Lena was one of them. You've got to see them live. I think of Harry. I also think of Ossie and Ruby. Now, remember, do you know what courage it took for them to speak the eulogy at Malcolm X's funeral.
At Malcolm X's, yes, yes, yes.
I mean, that was almost akin to being blacklisted, but they kept working. Thank God.
Yes. Yes, we were very blessed with them all the way through their lives. And, you know, Guy came on.
Oh, did he?
Yes, he's a jazz man, and he's so...
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
He's a blues man. I wouldn't say jazz. He's a blues man. And he's so absolutely wonderful. And every time he's written a song for his mother, and it's just heart-wrenching, the song. But the legacy that they have left in their children, in him, and what he's carved out. Because Guy and I went to college together.
I didn't know that.
Yes,
I didn't know that.
There's so many things, Damon, that you don't know, and we are running out of time because, you know, we don't get a chance to talk on the phone long enough.
No, we don't. And you know, Ruby played my mother in Roots, my grandmother
yes.
in Roots.
Your grandmother in Roots. Yes. You know, there is a small circle in which we do exist here in this business, and we are blessed.
You know something, I will really say, I always miss New York City because I never felt the camaraderie among black artists in L.A. that I always felt in New York.
Yes, there's a difference. When you go to Los Angeles, you first of all, you don't see people like you do.
No,
if you're not working, you don't see people. Unless you go maybe to a restaurant, you'll see them.
Right.
You know, and then in the working environment, it's there are different levels of how people can treat you. And
yes.
there's different levels. You know, we talked about one of my favorites. Is Anna Maria Horsford.
I love Anna. I love yeah. Anna Maria Horsford. I love you.
I know. And I'm hoping that she will, you know, have time to stop by here one of these times. And, you know, I'm going to say this because we're down to the last couple of minutes. This has been the quickest hour, I think, I've had. Ken Page was on last week, and I thought that was quick. I think this was as quick as that.
Is Ken doing? How is Ken?
Ken is just wonderful. He's fabulous. He's soaring, you know, as he always is. You know,
yes.
You all are making this for me such a joy to be able to do this week after week, and I thank you. This is about episode 15 now, and when I get to 20, I think I'm going to take a deep breath and look about what I've accomplished. And I'm hoping that people still want to hear and tune in. And I hope that all of you all would come back and tell us how you're doing.
What you should do on the 20th is you should do the best of everyone and put it all together.
Well, that's a thought, but then I have to get into the studio and do all
of
that.
Oh, yes,
so
I know, yes.
Thank you for
giving
me more work, Damon. You know, thank you very much. I'm going to put you on mute in a minute here.
Okay.
I thank you, my friend, for coming on, for making this a joyous hour. It has been absolutely wonderful having you. And I thank you, everyone, for tuning in again. Next week, I will have the wonderful Vivian Reed on.
I love me some Vivian Reed.
Yes. Yes, and she is absolutely a fabulous, fabulous friend and performer. So I hope you all will tune in again like that. But at this point in time, I'm going to have to say thank you. Thank you so much, Damon. Thank you so much. And I'll see you in a little while on the Afterthoughts.
I love you. Goodbye, everyone, and thank you for tuning in. Goodbye.
All right. Bye-bye, everyone.
This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago. Never know how much I love you. You never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a feeling that's too hard to bear. You give me fever. When you kiss me, fever, when you hold me tight, fever, in the morning. all through the night. Listen to me, baby, hear every word I say. No one can love you the way I do, 'cause they don't know how to love you. Far away, you give me fever. When you kiss me, fever, when you hold me tight,